Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
I'm Andrew Peach. I've been a journalist here at the BBC's headquarters in central London for 25 years. But this is the first time I've come to work on a mission to find good news. Stories that leave you feeling inspired, uplifted, happy. The stories we actually tell each other all the time in everyday life. And why are we doing it? Well, because you got in touch and said you'd like to hear them.
Hi there, I'm Shane Godden from Toronto, Canada. I would love to hear a weekly segment on happy news. I would really enjoy that. However, I do feel that it's important to continue to provide, the sometimes grim stories that you currently are. Please do both. We would love happy news.
Hi, I'm Chelsea Kenya from London, and I'm a daily listener, and I love the idea of a weekly happy news episode. Thanks so much for listening.
I'm James Gibbons, and I think it would be excellent if the BBC made more happy pods. I love how the Global News podcast provides objective, factual, relevant news, but a whole podcast, perhaps weekly, dedicated to all the good in the world would be wonderful. Fundamentally, the good outweighs the bad in the world, and a happy pod would help everyone remember that.
This is Joe Sizemore from Mesa, Arizona, USA. And I want to express my sincere thanks for Happy News 2022. It was so heartwarming, it brought tears to my eyes. Please continue to provide us with happy news during 2023 and for years to come.
So, can we manage it? Half an hour of global news that makes us feel happy. Let's give it a go. On the way in the happy pod, the naughty Finnish Huskies who have a new home with Father Christmas.
Hi, babies.
That's right, cool.
The guy who survived for almost a month in the Caribbean on ketchup.
I tried to catch fish, I set different kind of traps, but that didn't work. So the only thing that really preserved me was the ketchup.
And the octogenarian whose knitwear might win an Oscar.
When I saw it on him in a movie, I did think it looked good. To me, it's just another jumper.
Those stories in the Happy Pot. Now, it turns out a lot of happy news is about animals and our relationship with them. When Girek Soudé from France set sail around the world, he was planning to do it on his own. And then he met Monique, and the two of them sailed the Atlantic together and got stuck in the Arctic ice for months. I should probably mention that Monique is a chicken. Girek told me how they met.
I met Monique in Canaries Island, and we fell in love together. So she jumped on board. So the first ocean I crossed was with Monique, was the Atlantic Ocean, and I never had a hen before, so I did not know what will happen. And the plan was to have a hen to have some company and some fresh eggs. And she gave me fresh eggs like almost every day. And she was like my best friend almost.
I mean, just to underline for listeners, when people hear this story and they hear you say, I met Monique in the Canary Islands, she hopped on board, I fell in love, she was my best friend, we laughed and cried together. We're talking about a chicken.
Yeah, exactly. But she's like, she was like my pet, you know, like a dog, more than that, actually, because we've been through like so many hard passage together. And, you know, like she was very special. I teach Monique how to swim. She did some windsurfing, you know. When she arrived in Greenland, she was probably the first hen to arrive on this land. Like all the population there, like the Inuit, they never saw a live hen.
Everyone listening will understand that Monique was there for you to talk to because otherwise you were very lonely. But what gives you the sense that there was something coming back the other way in this relationship?
Of course, she didn't talk, but every time I was like me talking to Monique, I know she was understand everything I said with this eyes. She was look at me like almost like a human, you know. We had some very good time, like polar bear swimming next to the boat, some very nice sunrise, and I knew she understand all that.
Monique was helpful when you got the news about your dad while you were away. Yeah. And you couldn't get back.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it was very, very hard time for me when I lost my dad because I was cut off the world with Monique, with no communication. And we had a fisherman come to see us and to tell me I just lost my dad. So it was very, very difficult for me because it was not possible to come back and to contact nobody from my family. And I was just with Monique. When I was very sad, she knew that and she came on my leg like a cat, but she's a hen.
What happened when the journey was over, when you came to the end of your travels? You'd had this very close relationship with Monique the whole time. What about when you got back?
When we come back in France, in Brittany, after 5 years, so we traveled like 45,000 nautical miles. So it was very hard to stop the sailing. But I was very happy to come back alive with Monique and with the boat. And so we spent some very different time, like on land, but on the small island. So she was still very close from the water. She had some other friends, like hen. And she almost spent more time on the beach trying to catch like the fish and the seaweed and all this kind of stuff. It was like a retired, you know?
Like a retirement. And the sad news is that you've lost Monique now.
Yeah, so I lost Monique a few days ago, so it was a very hard time for me, still very hard. But I try to remember all the good time we had together, and a lot of people, you know, like told me, oh, Monique traveled much more than me. And yeah, for sure.
Girek Sude, remembering the extraordinary life of Monique. Now, it strikes me that many of us have close relationships with our pets. If that's you, the Happy Pod is all about your emails. globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. Rebecca Wicker got in touch from Finland to tell us about two naughty huskies.
They're classically husky. They're really great dogs. They're great with people. They are really animal aggressive. And this is not my first time working with animal aggressive dogs, but a lot of people here don't have the same experience. And so it's difficult having dogs like this in a really small shelter.
Now, before we tell more of the story of Heiko and Raiko, we need to meet them. I'm going to ask you to unleash the huskies by opening the door. And you've warned us that Heiko and Raiko will make their presence felt on our podcast now. So let's have a listen to what they sound like, which might give us an idea of why the other animals are so scared of them.
Yes, my pleasure. Hi, babies. That's Raiku. His brother is a little bit quieter.
Okay. Off in the way.
They've been living in separate kennels. Because he's mischievous.
Are they happy playing with each other?
Yes, they really seem to. It's one problem, actually, with these two. They have very bad separation anxiety. So they really had to find a home together. But it's very difficult because they must be walked separately. And you can hear one of them screaming as his brother is being walked away from the house. Right, yes, you're so dramatic.
So therefore, you've got this challenge of Heiko and Raiku, who are these lovable dogs that are very large, that makes people perhaps reluctant to take them from the shelter. But they can't live in the shelter forever, and keeping them in the shelter is quite a challenge because in the end, you've got to look after other animals too.
Yes, exactly.
There's good news here because you have found a home. It's almost as though they're going to live with Father Christmas. Tell me about the home you found.
They are going up to a place called Rovaniemi, which is exactly where Father Christmas lives. And don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And this is a really good place for, you know, retired sled dogs to go. I don't know if they're going to be in contact with any sleds, but it's a nice, snowy, remote area.
And they're going together, which is the important thing.
Yes, exactly.
Rebecca Wicker with Heiko and Raiku talking to me from Finland. 24 days is how long Elvis Francois spent lost at sea. He was rescued by the Colombian Navy. Until then, he survived by eating ketchup. I talked to Elvis at home in Dominica.
It was three of us that was on the boat. and the owner of the dinghy, which the safety boat, he had to drop him back to the shore. So the time the next, my colleague went and dropped him to the shore, I was by myself. So that's the time I went adrift because the boat was taking water. I had to take off the water from the boat. So time I realized I was already way, kind of far away.
So you were miles offshore and there's not much you can do about it.
I could not do nothing much about it. And the dinghy is very slow also. So they could not have met me. I tried to call them. There was no service.
And what did you think in that moment where you realize you're a long way offshore? There's not really a way of calling for help. You can't move the boat. What's going through your mind?
Well, I was thinking of taking all the water from the boat and fix the sail to go back ashore. So that took me quite a while. And on my way back, that's when the sail got broke.
So you tried to fix the sail, and that didn't go well. Yeah. And then you got to fix the engine. And this is taking days and days and days with you on your own.
Right.
During that period, how are you surviving? What are you eating? What are you drinking?
I tried a seaweed, and that wasn't good. And then I saw it had a bottle of ketchup. So I decided I'm going to try to put some water with the ketchup and the bohayo to make something hot so I could drink. And when I make it, I see it was okay.
You've got your bottle of ketchup and you're thinning the ketchup with water to make it last longer, presumably.
Yes. And I add a little bohayo and a little, that's the garlic season, and a little Maggi so that it could give it a little flavor.
And how often were you drinking your ketchup mix?
3 times per day.
It doesn't sound that appealing, the idea of watered down ketchup with a bit of garlic and other seasoning in it. But I'm wondering whether when that's all you've got, you start to really look forward to it.
It satisfied me. The ketchup and the thing satisfied me because I drink it 3 times per day. Anytime I feel kind of weak and hungry, I'll go and make some to drink. So that keeps me up. I try to catch fish. I set different kind of traps to catch fish, but that didn't work. So the only thing that really preserved me was the ketchup.
And at the same time, are you still trying to fix the boat? Or are you just trying to attract attention from other people so someone comes to help you?
I was still working on the boat, trying to get it to do something about it. I also use the paint to write help on the boat.
Did you worry the ketchup was going to run out eventually?
I was praying that it do run short, but finally, the last day I got rescued, that is the time it finished. So I thanks God for that.
Well, so the timing was pretty perfect. You got to the bottom of the bottle of ketchup thinking, what am I going to do next? And then who rescued you in the end?
The Coast Guard saw me. A plane was passing and they saw me and the Coast Guard picked me up.
Since you've got back on dry land, Elvis, have you had any more ketchup?
Sure.
Are you still watering it down? Are you still making your special mix? Have you been tempted to try it again? Now you don't have
to. I'm not making that special mix, but I use the ketchup very often.
Have people been making jokes about ketchup?
Every day they call it me ketchup. Everywhere they see me, they call it me ketchup.
So you're now known as Ketchup?
Yes, my new name now is Ketchup.
Elvis Francois, otherwise known as Ketchup, with me from Dominica. I love listening to podcasts. It's quite an intimate experience because you often listen to them on your own through your headphones. And we wanted to get up close and personal on the Happy Pod with the sound that makes you happy. Desiree Tavera loves the sound of her son Mako singing.
Fickle, fickle, little star, how I wonder what you are.
We thought children and grandchildren might get a mention. We weren't expecting this, though, from Laurie in Vancouver in Canada. This is the sound that makes Laurie happy. It's the heartbeat of the baby she's expecting in June. Can't wait to meet little guy, says Laurie. All the best from us for the next few months. Here's another surprising one.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marina. I live in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Today, I would love to share with you one of the sounds that I enjoy the most. That is to say, the sound of knife sharpeners advertising their services.
From the knife sharpeners of Buenos Aires to southwest Scotland and Helen. Helen says, as the chilled shadows of the morning were slowly warmed by the rising sun, I recorded this robin singing its heart out. You can also hear the rooks nesting in the beech trees just outside the walls. Do send us your happy sound, globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. If you can record it as a voice note and email it to us, we love to hear from you. The Oscars are days away, and with 9 nominations, The Banshees of Inisherin is expected to do well. Set on a remote island off the west coast of Ireland in the 1920s, the film is visually stunning. And one thing that really stands out is the knitwear. The knitwear has been in Vogue magazine. The jumpers worn by actors like Colin Farrell have been painstakingly recreated by octogenarian knitter to the stars, Delia Barry, who I've been talking to at home in County Wicklow.
I didn't know what I was taking on. There was no patterns. There was only black and white photographs from the 1920s of fishermen.
So you studied the old photos and worked out the knitting pattern just by looking at the knitwear in the pictures?
Yes, I had to work out the pattern.
You must have incredible eyesight, amongst other things, to be able to do that.
I had a magnifying glass, but it was still very difficult to work it out.
And can you describe for people listening to our podcast what knitwear emerged? Because some people will know all about this. So what sort of style of knitwear is it that everyone's been admiring?
Barry's one is just fisherman rib. Colin's one is a little bit more, I don't know. It's not quite an iron, but there is a diamond, horizontal diamond in it.
And when you casually say Colin, Delia, what you're talking Colin about Farrell. Is your new friend Colin Farrell, the star of the film here, aren't you?
Colin Farrell, yes.
Did you get to measure him up?
No, unfortunately not. Would have been nice, but I didn't.
And can you believe that a lot of people have been saying your knitwear is the star of the movie? Your knitwear is about to win an Oscar.
I think it's just madness. I can't understand it because to me, it's just another jumper.
Uh-huh.
Now, when I saw it on him in the movie, I did think it looked good.
This could be a whole new career for you, Delia, knitting for the stars.
I'm too old.
You're not too old. Who else have you? Have you done this before? Have you knitted for movies and show business before?
I've knitted for Christian Bale, Jude Law, Emma Watson. I showed her how to knit for Little Women.
And have you got more bookings now? Are you working on new films?
I'm working on one at the moment, which I can't talk about.
What? You can't tell me?
I can't tell you. I'd have to kill you if I tell you.
Showbiz knitter Delia Barry. This is The Happy Pod with Andrew Peach, our new weekly bonus edition of the Global News podcast with the happiest stories in the world. Rounded up for you. On the way, happy news from Jason.
This is really beyond my wildest expectations, given that my only ambition was that I wanted to be able to have enough money to buy McDonald's.
More of your emails too to globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk.
Vodafone Park'ta. Duygusal anlar, tarihi görüntüler.
Picture the scene, thousands of teddies and toys raining down onto a football pitch. And that's the view that millions of people around the world had on Sunday when watching the football teams Besiktas and Antalyaspor. Dilaya Çin from BBC Monitoring, tell me why.
Istanbul's popular Besiktas football club fans went to a game against Antalyaspor with stuffed toys. These toys were there to be donated to children affected by the recent deadly earthquakes in the country's south and southeast. But these fans didn't just give the toys to an official there, but instead the game stopped at 4 minutes and 17 seconds, and the supporters threw the stuffed toys to the pitch. So you had this image of thousands of toys raining on the pitch, really piling up on the pitch. The mark of 4 minutes, 17 seconds represented the time of the earthquake, the 7.8 magnitude earthquake that hit the country's south on 6 February and killed over 45 1,000 people so far and affected 9 other provinces apart from Kahramanmaraş, the epicenter.
It's very powerful, isn't it, a moment like this at a sporting occasion where there are so many people gathered and we're used to it being really noisy. When there is a pause of any sort, a silence, a minute's applause, something like this, it's very, very powerful as a symbol of something important being recognised.
It was really, because we have been seeing on social media all these very saddening images of loss, of devastation. But these images, this footage of stuffed toys raining on this pitch was shared by so many people. It was so heartwarming for all of us really in this country, because we've been going through really hard times in the last 3 weeks or so. And do you know how important stuffed toys are for little kids? They treat them almost like real animals. It was very symbolic. It was a really powerful show of solidarity, really.
Dilay Achin from BBC Monitoring. Snowy weather can make us happy. It's been snowing in Spain in recent days and in North America. Colleen in Boston's been in touch. And this is the sound of Colleen walking in the fresh snow in her snow boots. The good nostalgic crunch, she says, juxtaposed with the birds singing in the background. It tells her spring is coming. And Gina in Oregon told me she'd been enjoying it too.
My name's Gina. I live in Brookings, Oregon in the U.S. We got some snow, which I personally love. And so I'm very happy about it.
Are you able to go out and enjoy the snow, walk in the snow, see children playing in the snow, that kind of thing?
Oh, most definitely. I made a bunch of snowmen with my niece yesterday, and I do morning walks every day. So it's been absolutely amazing, and I've taken lots of really cool pictures.
So we can add snow to the list of things that make you happy.
100%, yes.
Because, how often does it snow in your part of the world? We're hearing, weather forecasts from California where it never snows and people are in blizzards and that kind of thing. What about in Oregon?
I'm on the southern coast. It never snows in town where it actually sticks on the ground. I can look outside and my grass is still covered in snow. The ground is completely icy today, and I guess the last time it snowed like this was in 1989, so it has been a long time.
Gina with me from Oregon. This is a story about a young boy whose dream came true. Jason Arday was diagnosed with autism and global development delay when he was 11. He couldn't speak. At 18, he couldn't read or write. Now at 37, he's about to become the youngest black professor at Cambridge University. He's been talking to Amal Rajan.
This is really beyond my wildest expectations, given that my only ambition was that I wanted to be able to have enough money to buy McDonald's. And that is God's honest truth.
Just describe, if you would, some of the challenges that you face.
I guess the practical challenges in many respects were around when I arrived at secondary school, I'd only just learned to speak. So that paralysis of speech in some respects is a beautiful thing. I think sometimes people may think of it as a deficit, but it's actually an amazing thing to be able to observe the world happening around you and not being able to respond to that in some ways. It's quite a powerful thing. Or you recognise that when you do then have the ability to speak. The thing that becomes probably more difficult is being able to articulate these words on the page. And the beauty of being able to read and write or being literate is that it brings those words that kind of resonate in the brain to life. And without that, there's kind of a disconnect in terms of bringing together thoughts, feelings, patterns of emotion. And I guess I didn't experience that until I was 18.
It's so interesting you mentioned the word brain, of course, because I wonder to what extent you think we have made strides in recent years in understanding the benefits of neurodiversity, including autism.
I guess one of the things that's kind of really important, at least from my perspective, is decided that actually it's becoming more and more prevalent for people to be diagnosed as neurodivergent in their adult age. So one of the things that I'm kind of thinking about is what's happening for these people to slip through certain nets within our education systems globally for people to then be diagnosed, because there is a disadvantage to being diagnosed as an adult.
Let's be frank about it. Your story is absolutely inspirational. How did you challenge the narratives, the story, the stereotype that says, here's a guy who's not from a rich family, He's not from an academic family. He's got autism. He can't speak until he's 11. He's got global development delay. And here you are at the age of 37. You're about to become the youngest ever black professor at Cambridge. How did you take that on? Did you have an innate confidence?
So I must admit, the modesty of ambition didn't really arrive until I was fortunate enough to meet, you know, some really important people who really shaped my adult life from the age of 18. Obviously, my mum was instrumental in instilling some sort of belief, but I think given what the experts, in inverted commas, had said in terms of educational and behavioural psychologists, the horizon was pretty grim, to be quite honest. And one of the things that I kind of sat with is this idea that I might actually not achieve anything in life. And what's really interesting is that you develop a comfortability with that. You kind of accept that that might be my lot. Actually, maybe learning to speak was as good as it might get. And then cue the amazing people I met. And then you end up on this kind of crazy ride. And the last kind of 20 years has been quite surreal, to be quite honest.
Jason Arday at Cambridge University. Next week on The Happy Pot.
My name's Paul Williams. My happy place is my allotment. Just being outside, getting my hands dirty and growing things. And my happy sound, end of the day. Sun setting, birds tweeting, heaven.
Just like Paul, we want you to get involved. So do send us the happy news from your part of the world or send us the sound that makes you happy as a voice note. And remember, this is a new idea, so please let us know what you think of it. The email address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. And as you heard at the start, Shane, Chelsea, James and Joe got in touch. And that's why we're here. So from me, Andrew Peach, and our happy little team, Olivia, who likes the sound of fireworks. Tracy, who says this makes her smile. And editor Karen, who's gone for a happy swim. Thanks for being with us at the start of something new. A Happy Pod is back next week.